Hello, this is Smart Mouth, and I am Catherine Spires. We are also on Instagram at Smart Mouth Podcast and on Facebook in a private group. You can find it by searching for Smart Mouth, which is two words. We are also on Patreon at patreon.com/smartmouthpodcast. And I know I've been pushing the Patreon hard these days, but it's because I am gearing up to launch the Smart Mouth newsletter in a few months. And I'm actually hoping that I will be able to pay other food writers to contribute to it. That newsletter is going to be published on Substack, where my podcast company, which is called Table Cakes, already publishes its twice monthly newsletter. And if you want to hear about all the other podcasts that we are producing, you can find that newsletter at tablecakesproductions.substack.com. In today's episode, Los Angeles Times columnist and LA's biggest burrito fan, Frank Shong, is here to talk about, you know, his favorite food, and also to wonder why we don't assign food to categories like how they do in Europe. Who knows? Finally, please let us know where to get the best breakfast burritos in your city. Thank you and enjoy. Columnist for the LA Times. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We have done a panel together.
Yes.
And I think that's the only time we've met, except for that time in Koreatown where you were driving past me and we waved at each other.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. I think that reminded me I need to respond to the email.
Yeah. It took you a while, but that's okay. Yeah, there's turmoil at the Times. It's every public information. Everyone knows.
Yeah.
Even if it's not turmoil, it's...
Yeah.
A lot of activity.
It's just a lot of stuff happening. There's always a lot of stuff happening at the time. So.
What is your column about?
So I guess the way I talk about it is I say it's about diversity and diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
And so I basically just want to go and write about communities that the Los Angeles Times hasn't been in for a long time and just see what's going on there and see if I can, you know, write interesting things from that grow people's understanding mm-hmm. of the city and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So.
Was it your most recent article or a recent one where you talked about a bar in Koreatown?
Yeah. Obi Bear.
Mm-hmm.
Obi Bear. Been going there a couple of years now, ever since I've been a Dodgers fan, really, because it's, you know, being a Asian baseball fan is kind of different. I don't know. Like, and I wanted to watch it with other Asian people or whatever. And so that's how I ended up at Obi Bear, because I was wondering, you know, where are the Asian Dodger fans or whatever. And that was such an exciting season. You know, the first season, like seeing Kershaw's no-hitter.
Uh-huh.
And then also like Ryu was doing well. And so like, you know, they love Ryu at Obi Bear, and there were just a lot of yelling and screaming. It's fun.
That does sound fun.
Yeah.
Why is it different being an Asian baseball fan?
I think just being like a non-white baseball fan is different because like there are a lot of like, there's a lot of talk in baseball about like playing the right way.
And, okay.
You know, it's typically non-white players that don't play the right way.
Got it.
And so there's this racial subtext to all of these sort of like controversies, especially with Puig and stuff. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was I heard about that, and I don't follow baseball.
Yeah.
People are, was it the manager of the Dodgers who said something most recently, said something like he was unprofessional or immature.
Yeah.
And holding them back.
Yeah. And I don't know. I remember like in 2015 or something, I got to go report in the Dodgers clubhouse for the
mm-hmm.
postseason.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to like come up with Metro Dodger angles. I ended up writing about the Dodger dog. And then,
it's sometimes more interesting.
Yeah. The story of the Dodger dog or whatever. You know, Puig, the translation was being done by like, you know, a volunteer,
mm-hmm.
someone already on staff, and then like somebody who worked for the Dodgers TV station or mm-hmm. whatever. And so, like, I just wonder, like, how is any, no one's talking to them, you know? How do they know what's going on with them?
Yeah.
You know? And so it's all coming secondhand from filtered through all these different sources. And as someone who often reports in a different language, you know, lots can be lost.
So, yeah. Well, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, how were the Dodger docs?
They were good, you know? I don't know. I mean, Dodger Dogs, the funny thing about the piece was, it actually, the idea came from Dylan Hernandez, who's a sports columnist there, and I was asking him, hey, what should I write? And he's like, you should do an expose on how the Dodger Dog is terrible. He's a famous hater of the Dodger Dog or whatever. And like, and so I got to interview Vin Scully for that article.
Oh, wow.
And like, yeah, I got to ask him, like, when was the last time he had a Dodger Dog? And apparently it had been a while, you know, so it was a little fake controversy of how he advertises the Dodger Dog but doesn't eat it. You know?
Oh, my
gosh. He's eating healthy food. So
right,
anyway,
he needs to.
Yeah. But I talked to, like, Fab Hot Dog, you know, and, like, they almost threw some shade at the Dodger Dog.
Oh,
and then
my goodness.
Pink's Hot Dog was very political in their response, you know.
They would be.
Yeah. So.
One time I wrote in a bigger article, I think about the county fair, I was like, Pink's has a stall there, and they have a menu item called the Trump Fries or something like that. And the day after I wrote it, they took that off the menu. I think they're not trying to, like, get involved with anything.
Yeah, they don't want to get into any, they want any controversy at Pink's. They
just
want to
be a hot dog stand.
You know, it's that's refreshing.
I suppose. Yeah. I suppose. Well, sometimes I'm kind of like, if you're not anti-Trump, you're bad. But anyway, that's for a different time. Yeah. We're going to talk about burritos.
Okay.
If you voted for Trump, you don't get to eat burritos. Yeah, that's
true, another rule.
I want to take a bit of a detour before we start into that, because in the course of my researchings, apparently the first English language cookbook to have a recipe for guacamole, or as they called it, guacamole, was in 1930.
Huh.
And it was published here in Los Angeles. And then in 1932, another recipe came out called avocado guacamole.
Guacamole.
It was avocados, chopped up tomatoes, and cayenne pepper mixed together. And the instructions were to spread it over toasted tortillas or just toasted bread.
Hmm, okay.
So I feel like we have a 1932 avocado toast spotting in the wild.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, where did avocado toast? Like, I've heard of one theory that it started in Australia,
mm-hmm.
right? You know?
Yeah.
I also heard from, like, you know, Latino friend, Latinx friends who say that, you know, they've been eating it for generations, you know.
Yeah, you know, and even like the, I don't know, the Aztecs, they would mash up the avocados and then put it on tortillas.
Yeah.
So I don't know if, like, anyone contemporary gets to claim credit for it, really.
Yeah, it seems like it was a lot of people doing it.
Yeah.
In many different
yeah.
ways.
Yeah. So. Honestly, how else are you going to eat guacamole?
Yeah.
Like,
right?
You need some sort of carb device for it.
You know, I went to El Torito, and they claim on the menu that they introduced guacamole to the United States. There's also a restaurant in Tijuana, and I forgot what it's called, but they also claim to have invented guacamole, too.
I mean, a lot of people try and claim things.
Yeah.
Like, here in Los Angeles, El Cholo is a restaurant here that has been here since the 20s, and they claim to have invented the burrito.
Oh, they all? Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Whether that's true or not. And that comes from an era where restaurants were still calling themselves Spanish restaurants and serving Mexican food because of racism.
Yeah. Yeah.
So around Los Angeles, and I'm assuming in other cities, you'll still see signs for Spanish restaurants, and they usually don't mean that.
Huh.
Yeah, huh. El Cholo is
you know,
one of
I thought Spanish was like an East Coast thing where, like, they say, like, you know, the Spanish communities and stuff
right.
like that.
Right, yeah.
Is it?
I think it kind of still is, or it's still a linguistic mistake that's made more often on the East Coast than the West Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And that probably has a lot to do with more, like, Latinx activism in this part of the country.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
So here's the thing. This episode about burritos, it could easily be a 5-hour episode. There's so much to talk about. Tortilla making goes back to those Aztecs were also making guacamole, and probably even before, because archaeologists have found, like, all manner of cooking implements in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them seem to have been made for, like, pressing and then cooking something flat.
Okay.
So we have to jump forward a couple thousand years to when the Spanish came to the New World and brought wheat with them. Uh-huh. As Gustavo Arellano says, the Europeans were too stupid to figure out how to grow their own corn, so they just brought their own crops.
Okay.
As we know them, they're made with flour tortillas, which, because they're made with flour and not corn, by definition, it makes them like a sort of northern Mexico, southern U.S. thing. By contemporary geography, okay. That was all part of the same cultures for thousands of years, including New Spain.
Yeah.
At the very end there. There are lots of theories about the name burrito. Because as Southern Californians, I don't speak Spanish, but I know by looking at it that burrito means little donkey.
Yeah. Burrito. Uh-huh. Yeah,
exactly. It seems most likely that that name actually came from the vaqueros, who were the cattle drivers in what is now North Mexico, South Texas, basically, because their travel food was tortillas and beans, and they'd wrap the tortillas around the beans so that they didn't have to bring actual containers, and they would just carry them on the back of their burros that they were riding.
Interesting. You know, I was at Ninfas in Houston, the original Ninfas on Navigation. It's like a Mexican place that, you know, helped originate Tex-Mex or something like that. Mm-hmm. I was noticing that the burrito, they call it tacos there.
Interesting.
But they're essentially pretty large. You know, the line between taco and burrito is getting pretty blurry there.
Yeah.
And they were flour tortillas, you know. And they were presented in a rolled shape. And so I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but you know.
It does seem like taco and burrito used to always be used interchangeably, and that was partly just due to different regions. Basically, yeah. There were some regions that called them burrito, more likely to be in the north, and other places what they called tacos wasn't necessarily any different from a burrito. But having said that, originally burritos were a lot simpler than what we think of now in the U.S. as burritos, which we'll get to that. In the 1940s, there was a restaurant in Juarez, which is right on the border across the river from El Paso. That was called Los Burritos, and it sold beans in tortillas, I think exclusively.
Los Burritos?
Los Burritos, yeah. Pretty straightforward, right? Mm. There's a lot of restaurants in the world called Los Burritos now. So I don't know if there are any of them related to the first one. Later, 1940s, 1950s, braseros? Those were the people back when the United States was like, yes, please have migrant workers come to this country.
I see.
So those were the people who were invited to come here, but they were still low paid agricultural workers. But the food that they ate as part of the program, they were given lunch, it was burritos. And I think that might have been a time where it became where Anglos got exposure to the idea.
Yeah, the origin story of burritos I have in my head is that, you know, farm workers needed to carry a full meal into the fields and sew big tortillas and just put whatever in it. And
yeah.
Then, you know, eat it with one hand or something like that.
That seems about right, right?
I don't know. I don't have any citations, though.
But just looking at it, you're like, I could carry this around.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I like about it. You know.
Do you remember your first burrito experience?
Well, I grew up in Tennessee, and so it was, we didn't have a lot of Mexican restaurants around. I think the first time I ate a burrito was like those frozen burritos you can get at the grocery store. And I liked them a lot, you know, but I just liked all food. And then I think I had a restaurant burrito, which was like, I don't know what restaurant it was, but it was like the one Mexican restaurant in the area, and it served like a wet burrito. It was like covered in a bunch of stuff, and you had to eat it with a knife and fork. So I didn't really get into burritos or even Mexican food until coming to Los Angeles.
Was it coming to college? That's when you came here?
Yeah, UCLA in 2006.
Were you immediately transfixed by the food?
Yeah, that became sort of like my main activity. You know, I used to have a food blog back in college with my friends called Delicious Boys, and we would all kind of update it. I don't know. It was just like we weren't really the type to go out and drink a lot and party a lot. You know, two of us had like this alcohol allergy or whatever.
Oh, so, no.
Like, we would just essentially like go out and eat a lot
yeah.
as our sort of recreational activity. And through that, just kind of saw the city and then fell in love with it. Yeah.
That's so nice. Did you know you were going to stay here?
Yeah. Yeah. After college, the whole goal was not to have to move back to Tennessee. And so, you know, I think like after kind of going around and seeing everything, I really began to kind of identify with LA. You know, we've moved around a lot. You know, I was born in Michigan, raised in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
LA is the only place where I ever felt like I belonged, in the sense that not, you know, everyone kind of belongs here. So
Yeah, that's true. So I know that you've like written, referenced your upbringing in Tennessee and your parents having to drive for hours to find groceries that they liked and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you like anything about Tennessee?
You know, I didn't really have my eyes open growing up in Tennessee. You know, I keep looking back at my experience and like, I never had hot chicken. You know, I never had an awareness of the Black community in Nashville.
Uh-huh.
You know, I only had an awareness of, you know, mainstream white culture and then the six Chinese restaurants that my parents would eat at on a rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I gotta say, like, you know, I think the year or like 2 years after I left Nashville, it was put on the New York Times as like 39 places to visit before you die. You know, and I was like, huh. And I was like, wait, what's going on there? And you know, and so I don't really feel like I know Nashville, kind of like, I don't know, when you grow up a place, you just, it's boring and it's ugh, and you don't want to like, you know, you don't want to really engage with it. And, you know, especially the things that, it wasn't that cool to be an Asian kid growing up in Tennessee. I was like one of two Asian kids in my high school. It wasn't that cool for my parents. You know, my mom experienced a lot of discrimination at work.
Mm.
And so, you know, I was pretty eager to like get out of there my whole life.
Are your parents still there?
No, they actually moved out to LA a couple years ago. They moved in with me at the time. Also wrote about that. We actually lived over there on Willowbrook together for about 3 years.
That's close.
Yeah. It's very close. You know, I thought moving to California would be far enough, but it was not. Like living with them is cool. Learned a lot more about them. Now they both live up in Northern California because my mom got a job up there.
So. Yeah, right. And Northern California is pretty cool too.
Yeah, yeah. My mom lives in Mountain View and she says there's more Taiwanese people there, therefore it's better.
Right. That's the metric everyone uses.
Yeah.
So we mentioned that tacos and burritos were sometimes used interchangeably or at least meant the same thing in different regions. But I feel like over time, somehow, what we know of as burritos became a thing with a lot more ingredients. And I'm wondering why rice started being put into burritos.
Yeah, it's an extra carb, right? Why have three carbs in one dish?
Yeah. Do you put rice in your burritos, like if you're in one of those like assembly line places?
You know, I've evolved in my burrito feelings. Like I used to be very against beans in general.
Okay.
And then so I would have rice instead of beans.
Gotcha.
And then now I like beans. And so I don't really specify. So I like both, honestly, because I used to only eat rice in burritos.
Okay. Too. I feel like rice is just like too much. And maybe also because it's not as flavorful as the other ingredients.
Yeah.
And you don't want to pack all that flavor in there.
Yeah.
I did kind of wonder, there's two things that I wondered that I couldn't find any like proof of. One, if burritos or if beans are somehow part of the definition of burritos, because those are definitely something that in my, I'm sure, limited experience, like never happens on tacos.
You know,
except for like breakfast tacos. That's,
I feel like there isn't like in France or like in Italy, if you want to call something a pizza, or call something champagne, there are entire associations policing the term, right?
Uh-huh.
There isn't that for burritos. Cause like you look at, what's that place with the little thin burritos? They don't have any beans in them.
Oh, it's, Burritos La Palma.
Yes, Burritos La Palma. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So those are burritos too, right? Or I'm not going to tell them that what they're making is not burritos. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. They're kind of more taco-y in the sense that they're much smaller than burritos, but bigger than tacos.
Yeah.
and they're rolled.
Yeah, and then why aren't they flautas, you know? Or yes. and then what's the difference between flautas and taquitos, you know? Like, I used to think flautas were flour tortillas and taquitos were corn, but apparently they can be made with both, and I recently ordered flautas and got corn. And so I'm just like, well, I don't know. Like, it's all Mexican food, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's all regional. Because when you look it up, and I have, they'll be, everyone says, like, well, sometimes they're called this and sometimes they're called that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's another, I don't, another mystery to me. I used to say I preferred flautas over taquitos, and I now feel stupid for saying that, you know?
It's okay. I didn't know that tacos and burritos were different when I was growing up, so we all have our thing. I was also wondering if putting rice, adding the rice to the beans, if that came, like, before Tex-Mex, because the combo platter with rice and beans is such a Tex-Mex invention. I mean, it literally is. But if somehow, because those are from the same areas, if they were like, or if the combo platter came from rice and beans.
I don't know. It feels like we're talking about the same food in so many different forms. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Like, I think, I don't know, in SF you see burritos with rice more standard, right? The standard Mission burrito comes with, like, rice and, like, a bunch of stuff in it, right? I don't think the same is the case for, like, San Diego or LA, right?
Yeah. In fact, let's talk about that.
Yeah, let's see it.
So San Francisco's burritos are Mission burritos. That's what they're called by insiders. And you wrote, first of all, you gave me a list of foods, but I knew that we had to talk about burritos because you wrote, like, paragraphs about them.
I can talk about burritos for a while.
So what you said is that Mission style is good, but the burritos are too wet and structurally unsound, and you don't like how it basically slowly explodes in your hand while you eat it.
Yeah, for me, burritos, for some reason, I have very specific burrito opinions. Because for the rest of food, I'm just like, whatever it is, I like it, you know? And then, but for burritos, it's like very important for them to be structurally sound, too.
Right.
It has to have, you know, I would like it to be able to be eaten with one hand, you know? I want it to be able to, like, it's the convenience that's important of it, too. And so, like, you know, I think Mission burritos are, you know, they're too wet. You know, they're like and then because sometimes the tortilla is steamed, you know, like sometimes you get a pretty soggy bite.
You know? Yeah, and who wants that?
Yeah.
So it's thought that the Mission burrito was invented specifically at one restaurant in San Francisco called El Faro, and basically what happened was he was feeding a bunch of firefighters one day, and they were very hungry, and he started making bigger tortillas. And he basically was like, oh, the sky's the limit with how big the tortillas can be.
The super burrito.
Yes, exactly. So he added two beans and rice, salsa, meat, corn, sour cream, cheese, guacamole. What do you put in your ideal burrito?
I don't typically like to have the sour cream.
Okay.
Because now I'm lactose intolerant, but it's also like, it's usually like crema, I guess. And so it's much like wetter. It's the thing that adds the wetness.
Yeah.
And so, I don't like to have sour cream. I don't really put avocado in it, or I don't really put avocado in it too much either. Or like guacamole in it.
Why?
Too much. It costs extra.
Okay, and, fair.
And yeah, it also adds to the wetness, you know, like I like to be able to, I like a certain like chew, like on a burrito.
So this is so interesting. I feel like so many people's food preferences are totally about texture.
Yeah.
Do you have that with like other, like, I don't know, dumplings? Have you figured out that you prefer like a thicker skinned dumpling?
No, I'm pretty much still at I like all dumplings. For noodles, certainly, you know, texture is very important for noodles, you know, like knife cut versus like hand pulled, or if they're thin, or if the noodle cooks long in the broth or something like that, you know. Some noodle soups aren't about texture, I feel like seolleongtang, the Korean one, like you're not really trying for any texture there. They're boiling it. But that's an interesting observation. I do like a certain mouthfeel when it comes to burritos.
Yeah. Do you like it when sometimes they build the burrito and then put it on a grill for a second? Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to like crisp it up a little bit.
I like that. The crispness is like a very, you know, small pleasure, I think.
Okay.
What the good thing is that, like, if they lard the tortilla, mm-hmm. And, like, if they grill it up, then it becomes much more stretchy, and you get, like, a much more sort of pleasant chew, I think. And so, like, I notice in, like, San Diego, they always lard the burrito, and it's always, like, a very stretchy tortilla. And so, for me, like, when there's a stretchy tortilla and, like, it's like, a nice, very tawny bite, you know, I don't know what any of these words mean, but...
They sound right.
That's what I'm after, yeah.
Okay, so no crema or sour cream, no avocado. What do you put in it?
It's pretty, like, varying
okay.
each time, you know. I like asada. I like cabeza. I like... carnitas. I get carnitas the most, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's a strong choice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I also like the LA burritos, like where, you know, Jonathan Gold wrote about Allen B's, right? You know, and how, like, and that tortilla is very different. It's like sort of a drier, like more papery tortilla or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it is. There's
more,
like,
bean focused.
Yeah. And so the Allen B's burrito is just beans and cheese.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes have a problem with, like, an excess of melted cheese, mm-hmm. so it's not my favorite. But I do feel like that one is closer to the inspiration for frozen burritos that you buy at the store.
Yeah, yeah, maybe so. And there are big, like, frozen burrito companies in L.A., right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I even ate that.
Probably.
Mm, yeah. That's cool.
So the Mission Burrito is from the early 60s. That's when it was... created for the first time. And we should mention that the founder of Chipotle is a big fan mm-hmm. of the Mission Burrito.
yeah they're ripping off the Mission Burrito, essentially.
Yes,
right?
It's exactly the Mission Burrito. Apparently he, like, thought that he wanted to go into high-end dining, but then he saw, like, how the Mission Burritos were made, and he's like, oh, I bet this is, like, cheap to implement. And so he brought it to Colorado. So someone in an article that I was reading made the good point that because Chipotle is nationwide now, specifically Mission burritos are what most Americans think of as burritos.
Did people have a concept of what burritos were before Chipotle?
I'm trying to think.
I bet they didn't eat as many.
Yes. I do know that. So one of the reasons that I know that I didn't know the difference between tacos and burritos growing up is because I went to college in Santa Barbara, and there's a restaurant there called Freebirds, which is the exact same thing as Chipotle.
Oh, interesting.
Except for it was the only location. And let's see. So Chipotle opened in 1993. I don't have a memory of, like, knowing about it, though.
Do they make you feel, like, really stressed out and you have to make your choices very quickly?
Yes. I don't know what I want.
Chipotle has a lot of choices to make, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So at Freebirds, I was like, oh, so burritos are the big ones. Got it. So maybe it's just that it's got to be... Maybe it's just the cheapness of the assembly line
mm-hmm.
that makes it kind of a ubiquitous business model.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it definitely lends itself to fast casual. And then the customization, which, like, you know, everyone seems to be, like, really into, is, like, you know.
Yeah.
Every fast casual thing is just endlessly customizable.
Yeah.
Right?
And people and so, like that. And it's sort of like how In-N-Out, your coolness in Los Angeles is really based on, like, how weird your menu order gets. Yeah. Like, how off menu do you go?
I'm not very cool, then. I just get a double-double. But
what onion style do you get on your double-double?
I get grilled onions, mm-hmm. you know, because, like, when someone asks me the question, do you want grilled onions? Like, it's like, yes, you know.
Interesting.
It wasn't a conscious decision. And then I just get animal style fries, but not the burger, because that's a lot of animal style.
Okay.
So, yeah.
The grilled onions specifically on In-N-Out burgers make it taste like French onion soup to me.
Interesting. Yeah, they do. They're caramelized.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, they're actually caramelized.
Yeah, and then some meat and a little cheese.
Yeah, and French onion soup, they're caramelized as well.
Mm-hmm.
No? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and just a ton of cooked onions. I don't know, it's just the first time I had it, I was like, I'm eating solid soup.
It's just a big onion flavor.
Yeah. You said that your favorite kind of burrito was the San Diego burrito. So my understanding was that the San Diego burrito is also called the California burrito, and you only call them California burritos if they're from San Diego, and that the difference was that they had French fries in them. But then you said San Diego kind with thicker, chewier tortillas and less sauce in it.
Yeah, to me, that's the San Diego burrito. I mean, I went to San Diego and ate like four or five burritos in a weekend or something like that. And so I didn't always get California style. California style is like, you know, like a particular menu choice, carne asada. Essentially, it's carne asada fries in a burrito.
Yeah, right? It's the fries and specifically the carne asada. Carne asada is a big San Diego thing. Do you remember what's, I think it was called Inside SoCal. It's that fake run by teenagers news show that a bunch of guys on Saturday Night Live did.
No,
and they all talked in beach bro accents. And one thing that they always talked about, they'd be like at a party and they've got like some sweet carne asada on the grill. They talked about carne asada all the time, which I thought was so specific and correct.
What started out as a couple of us just playing Beirut and grilling some good ass carne asada has turned into kind of more of like a legit low key kickback.
So yeah, basically you just dump a pile of carne asada fries into a tortilla.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's in San Diego and like places around here that are doing, I feel like there's a San Diego style of California burrito because you can get California burritos in a lot of different places. Like, I feel like for burritos, the restaurants that end in burritos, like Humberto's, Rambertos, Alberto's, like all have pretty tasty burritos for some reason. I don't know why or how.
I can tell you why.
Oh, you can? Holy crap. Yeah.
Okay. So one of the first California burrito owners, store owners in San Diego, he had a restaurant that I don't know what the actual name of it was, but it ended in Bertos. So it was like Alberto's or something like
that.
Yeah. And he decided, I don't know how he landed on this, but he's like, clearly the secret to my restaurant success is that it ends in Bertos. So I'm going to open all these other burrito places and they're all going to have different names that all end in Bertos.
No way.
But first, let's go live to a developing store at Rigoberto's Mexican Eatery to check in with Troy.
Troy, what up, dude?
How's it going over there, man?
It's going pretty good. About a quarter of the way through this bomb-ass carnitas burrito.
It's hit or miss to the Bertos as well.
So. I can only imagine.
Yeah, like one time I went to a Alberto's, I think, in Rosemead, and I got like salad in my burrito and I was like, what the hell? And then but Rambertos in Redlands, like I used to go out with a girl and who was from Redlands, and I would go home to visit her parents because I wanted to eat this burrito. It was like, you know, it was really, really Rambertos. And then Humberto's in the neighboring city of Chino or something like that. Humberto's also had a really good burrito.
Rigoberto's is one of my favorite restaurants.
In my opinion, we are the home of the breakfast burrito.
Right. And breakfast burritos kind of follow from California. We are the home of the breakfast burrito, huh?
I think so.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. They're really popular here, and I think it's funny because there's now some breakfast taco places in Southern California that people from Texas brought over here to be like, you should eat more Tex-Mex.
Yeah.
But it's funny because the burrito is just like way bigger, a little bit plainer version of a breakfast taco.
Yeah, it is. It is. Like, I mean, I don't know. I always thought, I feel like our best burritos in LA are breakfast burritos, you know, like. Or our most popular burritos here are breakfast burritos.
Yeah, I mean, everyone goes to Lucky Boy at least once.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so for me, the ideal breakfast burrito, it has to have potatoes in some form, and it has to have bacon in it.
Interesting. So you're not like a chorizo person or a sausage? I like sausage.
You know? No, the tubed meats don't do much for me, generally speaking. I like bacon.
Yeah.
But then what I don't like is sometimes they'll do like grilled peppers and onions in it. For some reason with the breakfast burrito, I'm actually looking for something pretty plain.
Starchy, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you got to eat it in the morning. It's going to be in your stomach the rest of the day.
You're going to sleep for the rest of the day.
Exactly. You got to get stuff done. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, machaca burritos, right? That's like one of my, that's like a form of breakfast burrito now, and they have like peppers and onions and stuff in that too.
Can you tell the people what machaca is?
It is, I think it's stewed beef or pork or something, and it's stewed with peppers and onions. I really have no idea.
This
I just eat
really
it.
The mark of a true eater. You're like, it's a meat. I don't know what meat, but it tastes good.
This is why I'm not a food writer. You know, I'm mostly just eating. I'm not thinking.
You essentially are a food writer, I think. I think that the idea of food writing just being about, like, this is what it tasted like on the plate is a little bit outdated. So you write about culture around food, and I think that makes you a food writer, among other things.
Okay, cool.
So it's good that you can, like, kind of do cross-genre writing.
Well, most of my, like, food opinions boil down to, like, yummy, you know? no, you know, I didn't like it, you know?
See, that's why you don't talk about that part of the food.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be helpful.
Yeah, machaca is kind of different because they don't put potatoes in it. It's just, like, eggs and machaca usually.
Oh, that's probably why I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah.
Because that's where my, like, Irish side really, like, comes out. Gotta have a potato.
Not the potatoes for breakfast, yeah. Potatoes are an insane thing to eat for breakfast, but so many people do. So.
I know. American breakfast don't make any sense. Yeah. I just read something, this report that... pig farmers in the Midwest found out that the easiest and quickest way to fatten up the pigs was to feed them corn bits and skim milk, specifically skim milk, every day. So
why?
Bits of dried corn and skim milk is essentially breakfast cereal.
Oh, yeah, it is.
And
it is.
It's the most... inexpensive, least nutritionally dense, most fattening food that farmers give to pigs.
Wow. So it's like we should not be eating cereal.
Yeah, I think that's
I always thought
to think
a
about.
Cereal was a light breakfast, but no.
I mean, in your stomach. But then don't you just get hungry again anyway because it was so light?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I'm really one of those weirdos now who, like, is like protein for breakfast.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm like, you know, during the day I can't eat like a large meal or else I'll lose a lot of IQ points and I'll slow down, you know? So I have to eat, like, you know, like I said, a handful of almonds and Nutri-Grain bars or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah.
So speaking of the frozen burritos that you grew up on, that was invented in 1956 by a guy named Dwayne Roberts. And he had already pitched and made a success of selling frozen burger patties to McDonald's.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he was all about freezing things at a mass scale and sending them out there.
Interesting. Interesting livelihood.
He apparently stole the idea from a Latino butcher, as
sure,
one does.
Sure.
And the first, like, frozen burrito ingredients were, it was just beef and beans and red chili powder.
Huh. Okay.
Very simple.
Yeah.
Very old school, I feel like.
I feel like burrito is almost like the shape more than the contents or whatever.
God, I feel like that's so accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah, because... tacos are just like one fold over.
Yeah.
Burritos, you have to do at least three folds.
All those things, they have tacos, flautas, taquitos. They all have, you know, I mean, maybe they don't. I'm not actually sure. But to me, it seems like it's the same stuff, like in all these different forms or whatever. Everything is tacos. Everything
is
burrito.
I'm sure someone's going to get so angry at you for saying that.
Okay.
But it's just an opinion.
You can find me. I'll leave my email address for the angry email. So hope to learn from it.
That'll be good. There is a restaurant in Grand Rapids, Michigan that says that it invented the wet burrito.
Holy shit, I was born there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you're Frank, from the home of the wet burrito.
That's cool. Wow, I didn't know that about Grand Rapids. I only lived there till I was 7. So.
Okay. So the thing about that is that, I don't know, because apparently in other areas... you can order a wet burrito. You just say different things. You don't say wet burrito. In New Mexico, I guess, you order your burrito enchilada style if you want sauce on top of it. So I kind of think maybe they came up with the name.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem all that wild to think that, like, if you're eating a burrito, but you're, like, at home and you have a knife and fork and you want to pour some sauce over it for extra flavor.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem, like, too innovative.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's enchiladas, right? Like, yeah. I mean, like, it's just kind of like a way to market it to the audience in it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder who adjudicates these terms of, like, the first or whatever. You know, like, is it that, like, they get written up in an article, right? You know, mm-hmm. and then it's just like who wrote it and what publication, and did they survey all the burrito restaurants in the world or whatever?
For restaurants, it can be a little harder. Like everyone fights over cheeseburgers, who invented cheeseburgers first, for instance. But for like food items like avocado or guacamole, it's often when it was first in print, like the first time it ever showed up in a newspaper or a cookbook. You're like, oh well, that's. That usually that means that it had been in existence for about 10 years prior before it finally got published somewhere. Right.
That's how long it takes journalists to know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Someone should declare LA the home of the breakfast burrito or something like that. And
I mean, you can do that. No one said Frank Shong can't do that.
You know, I really like to be like a fan of food, you know, where I just don't, I don't have to like, you know, make sure that my opinions are like well researched, you know, or like intelligent, you know, they can just be partisan, you know, and that's why I don't write about food, because I just, it's the one thing in my life that I just get to be like purely, you know, react to, you know, everything else, like with the, when it comes to race and people of color and communities in Los Angeles, I have to be very measured, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, that can, well, again, I think that food ties into all of that, but you do want to, like, when you're talking about people's cultures and race and whatnot.
Totally.
Extra sensitive.
I know. Like on my Instagram, like, I used to say, this is bad, you know, or I don't like this, you know, whatever. And now I think about the family cooking it, you know, and like, do they deserve this? You know, am I just doing this for the likes? You know, is it worth it? And then the answer is always no, and then I don't post. So.
Yeah. Aw. See, that's being thoughtful.
Yeah.
That's nice of you.
Yeah.
Speaking of Instagram, what is your Instagram handle?
It's Frank Bear.
Frank Bear?
Yeah.
That's cute.
Normal spelling. So my last name means bear in Chinese.
So, oh, okay. Yeah.
So all of the Shongs are doing bear names. Like my brother is Ben Bear. My cousins are like different versions of bears. So
that's cute.
Yeah.
Is that on Twitter as well?
On Twitter, I'm just my first and last name, Frank Shong. Yeah.
Okay. Which is Shyong.
Yes.
Awesome.
Got that Y in there.
Yeah. Frank, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Listen to me, baby. I've come to make you see that I want to be with you, girl. If you want to be with me, but you got to go. That's all right. But if you got to go, go now. Or else you got to stay all night. The door, but if you got to go, that's all right. But if you got to go, go now, or else you got to stay all night.
A Table Cakes production.